welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bunnell. Hello.
Hello.
And I'll tell you right up front, this is going to be the last free episode for a couple of weeks because Parliament is going on recess on July the 31st.
School's out for summer.
Yeah, school is out for summer, so we are as well. We will do a paid episode on Monday. So if you don't think you can last that long without us, head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, put a fiver our way, and you'll get loads of extra content that will see you through the summer as well. But we're going to take a couple of breaks from both free and paid episodes while Parliament is in recess. By the way, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it in all the mania of the politics, I suggest you jump back into the timeline and listen to Emma's brilliant discussion with Sarah Dighton, which I don't normally listen to the show because I can't bear listening to my own voice. But because I wasn't on that episode, I listened to it and I absolutely loved that conversation. It was fascinating. So do go and listen to that if you want some summer listening from us.
And I highly recommend Sarah's book, actually, as summer reading. It really is a very, very good book.
Yeah. It's on the to-read list for sure. Well, with all those niceties done, turns out politics is happening and it's happened on both sides of the Atlantic. We're going to have to start in the US. Let me set a scene for you, dear listener. I had been to the pub. It would have been a very nice afternoon in the sun in the pub. I'd only had one beer. It was very casual. I get on the tube, get a message from Emma. Now, getting messages from Emma is always a pleasure. It happens often. It often happens. Sometimes they're serious. Let's be honest. Most of the time,
they're just emojis or cats.
Emojis, cat pictures. The archive is not for sharing. Let's put it that way. On this, rather ominously, there was no comment, just a link to Twitter. I pressed the link to Twitter and it was President Joe Biden announcing he was not standing for re-election. Ah, that rather blew this calm Saturday evening. Sunday evening.
I think it was Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, sounds like it was a Sunday. I don't quite know where to start with this because it's huge, huge news, but it's news that has felt like it's been building for a while.
Yeah, I think I tweeted something like, is there a German word, which is a classic Twitter meme, isn't it? Is there a German word?
Of course.
For when something's both really surprising and really inevitable.
Yeah. I have to say, look, I think I have quite a lot of sympathy to Joe Biden's general politics. He's probably a bit more communitarian, if that's an appropriate word, than I am. But I generally think he is a genuine, sincere, good person and a genuine and sincere good public servant. Were I to be American, I would have next to no issue in voting for him. I think it's rather sad his career, which is illustrious. I mean, if you read back the scale of his achievements and over the decades, it's staggering, frankly. I think it's rather sad he's ended it in this way because the deterioration, I found it quite distressing to watch, honestly.
Yeah, no, I agree up to the resignation, if I'm honest. I think if he hadn't resigned, I think it would have been sadder because we would have watched that deterioration go further in public more.
Oh, I agree with that entirely.
I think that his last political act has been one of dignity and generosity. It doesn't completely make up for the last few months of not making that choice. He could have made it sooner, although politically, in many ways, he's absolutely screwed the Republicans making it as late as he did. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's a moment of grace in a career of grace.
But I agree with that entirely. I tell you what I think is the shame that he feels like he's being coerced into this. Whereas actually, I think, look, obviously you have to be careful when you announce you're not re-standing because you don't want to become a lame duck, right? I totally understand that. I think had he always had in mind and set things up in a way where he was only a one-term president, which is what he should be at his age.
And what he originally kind of stood as. I think that's been largely forgotten, but he did kind of say, I'm going to be the generational bridge. I'm going to pass the torch. But then, as all people do, oh, it turns out only I can do this.
Because I think he could truly go down as a great one-term president, having, never mind saving the country from Trump. He obviously got it through the end of the pandemic. He has done all sorts of other domestic things, probably most of which are lost to people like me on this side of the Atlantic.
Well, I think economically, I mean, things like the Inflation Reduction Act will have a very, very long tail in terms of the reshaping of the American economy. And if it's allowed to stand. So I think it is obviously endangered by Trump and Trumpism.
As
But
most
if,
things are.
as most things are, but if the Democrats win and therefore the moves within the Inflation Reduction Act stand, the American economy has essentially been reshaped by Biden.
Yeah, I have to, and obviously that has inspired a lot of the work Rachel Reeves is doing as well here in the
Absolutely.
UK. Again, I don't necessarily agree with the approach, that rather at home approach, but I totally get it. And he, I think what you can say about Biden in a sincere way is he has, over his career, put America and American citizens and quote unquote normal American citizens first. And this is a man who's had a difficult life in lots and lots of different ways. And I'm sure on some nuances of policy, I agree with him and don't agree with him, whatever. But I think he is a sincere and good public-spirited man.
I mean, I think where I and Biden come from very much the same perspective, and I think where a lot of the rhetoric that I like from Keir Starmer is that his, and where I think you probably would have a disagreement, is that sense of putting the state to work in the service of the people. And I know that you're considerably less statist than I am and than
Sure,
Joe Biden is.
although if the state's going to do stuff, I'd rather it did it effectively.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there are two questions when it comes to the use of the state. There's effectiveness and there's the activeness. And I think Biden has tried to do both. And I think
Yes.
Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer are going to try to do both. And I suspect that one of the long-running disagreements you and I will have over this podcast is how much that the British
Sure.
state certainly should be doing. But that he has a coherent strategy for the US state and has been really quite dramatically implementing it in the short time that he's had has been very impressive.
And we should also remember that Biden's legacy is one of a great deal maker. That is his whole, that's how he does business and gets it done. And as much as he's ideological, what I like about him is that he's also practical and realistic. And I think that in the top levels of politics is really to be admired. Now, obviously the thing now is he stood down, stood away from re-election, which I think is appropriate. And the means looks like Kamala Harris is essentially going to take the Democrat nomination.
As I understand it, she's now got officially the support. It just needs to be ratified at the convention,
The
but
convention.
there's nobody going to run against her at the convention. I mean, maybe Marianne Williams will have a little tilt for fun, but
Then there's been no serious challenge ever since.
no real challenge,
The
no.
Democrat
And
Party
all
is
of the people who might have done, your
Gavin Newsom.
Gavin Newsoms, your Gretchen Whitmers have all rode in behind Kamala.
Presumably one of them will get the VP pick as well.
No, I think the VP pick will go to a white governor from a white male governor from a swing state, which is neither Gavin Newsom
That's
nor
true.
Gretchen Whitmer.
That's true. Yeah, California doesn't really come down count as a swing state.
California is not a swing state, and Gretchen Whitmer's too female.
And Kamala Harris is also too much from California to pick
Yeah,
another.
you definitely couldn't have two Californians. God, can you imagine?
All I've got is the OC theme tune in my head now.
Yeah.
But so that will be
Oh,
a new.
Sandy Cohen.
Oh, really?
Oh, Sandy Cohen and Seth Cohen. Age-wise, I'm exactly between the two, and
This is very revelatory. Right, we'll have this therapy session after the show. Let's get back to the politics. I think your analysis is right. It'll be a straight white man from a swing state. I actually wish it would be Pete Buttigieg, who I think is utterly brilliant.
I like Mayor Pete, but he's got plenty of time,
Yes.
and Indiana's not really a swing state. Although, mind you, neither is it Tennessee where Andy Beshear's from?
I'm not sure, but whenever I watch Pete Buttigieg clips from whatever channel he's on, including Fox News, I always think he is utterly brilliant.
He's very good. I don't think he's the correct complement to Kamala's skills
Well,
necessary.
let's be blunt about it. America is not picking a black woman and a gay man in the at the same time. Let's be blunt.
I mean, I think that's probably true. I strongly suspect it would be Josh Shapiro or someone very similar.
Okay, well, we've heard that first. So that's over in the US. We're obviously going to do more of this, from September, October, as it all really kicks in the US election. But we couldn't not. We were inches, mere millimeters away from doing a special podcast on this, but we thought we'd leave it to literally
Literally
everyone,
everybody
everyone.
else. Yeah.
But we had to talk about it because it is a fascinating development. I think it's also been lost in the sort of one-term president stuff. He was also a two-term vice president and a very effective vice president, Biden.
Yes. And very much in that kind of reassuring voters who'd never voted for a black man kind of a way that we've been just been talking about. Scranton Joe, hero of the white working class.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope once the sort of hubbub after that terrible TV debate is done, Biden's legacy is remembered appropriately, as I say, as of a great public servant. I wrote a newsletter on this on Tuesday, and I wanted to get your take on it as well. You and I have said on this show, loads of other people said it, oh, TV debates don't make that much difference. Turns
Really
out
don't in general.
sometimes they do.
I mean, I think this is it's interesting. It comes back to one argument that you and I have quite often about negative partisanship.
Yes, go.
So I think it's that they don't make a difference positively, but you can really mess them up.
Well, you can certainly really mess them up. And this is, of course, what triggered the
So
whole chain of events.
the positive argument is always made in terms of Nick Clegg in
Yes,
2010.
that's what I was
But
thinking of.
frankly, that was as much a novelty argument as anything else. Like, it was the first TV debate. And it was the first time that Nick Clegg got a look in on anything. And in the end, it didn't actually make a big difference to the election results.
Yeah.
The Lib Dems lost a couple of seats, I think.
It lost about five, I think. I think it went from 62 to 57, something like that.
So it wasn't as impactful as it was thought in the immediate aftermath. Then the other one from the other side of the pond is JFK versus Nixon. If we're reaching back to the early 60s, then I think it's reasonable to say they're not often that impactful.
I've heard the argument you've made about the Nick Clegg, the I agree with Nick one before. In fact, you've articulated it to me a few times. And there is polling data to show that there was a huge boost after the first debate, largely because of the novelty factors you've outlined. And then it dropped back to basically where you would expect the Lib Dems to have ended up in the circumstances in which there were in 2010. I am less ready to dismiss it entirely. There was definitely a resetting and a reversion to the norm after the first couple of debates, but I think it did make some kind of impact, if nothing else, in the way that Clegg could assert himself in the coalition negotiations and all of that. So I do think they make some level of difference, but one doesn't want to overstate it either.
Yeah, I mean,
But in this
I
case, with
think
Biden.
what you can't do is ignore them because they are an opportunity to mess up.
Totally.
But they're not much of an opportunity to change a prevailing narrative, is what I'd say.
Well, and actually, in the case of Biden, there was already obviously the narrative of, is he too old? Is he able to do this?
And his team pushed for those debates at that time. They got everything they wanted. And it, just goes to prove the old maxim, be careful of getting everything you want.
Well, yeah, be careful what you wish for. Absolutely. Well, it will be really fascinating to see how the Harris campaign, as it is now, galvanizes. Well, it's got the money, it's galvanizing momentum from what we can see from the initial polling as well. So that's going to be fascinating to watch. I do actually want to give out, slightly at the other end of the political scale, but we should give another shout out to another female leader, which is, of course, Labour looks like it's going to have a female leader in Wales.
Elendon Morgan, yeah, absolutely.
You're finally going to vote for a woman to lead, so part of you.
Oh, about bloody time, honestly.
I thought you might
Well,
say
we're not going
that.
to vote for her, are we? Because she's getting in by acclamation.
Yeah, I thought about bloody time might be your take on it.
With Hugh Aranka-Davies as her deputy, which is very interesting. He's very good environmentalist, Hugh.
Okay.
I've been watching his career for a very long time.
Can I just say that's one of the most Emma Bunnell sentences I've ever heard. He's a very good environmentalist. I've been watching a Labour politician from Wales for a very long time.
Well, I worked with he because he used to be an MP,
Yeah,
and when I
I remember the
ran
name.
CERA in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, he was someone that we worked with when he was a junior minister.
It was just a very, yes, I recognise the name. It was just a very Emma Bunnell sentence.
I just a little plug for my newsletter, but not for me. So immediately in the aftermath of the election, I said, here's a bunch of things I'm going to write about. And I included Scotland and I didn't include Wales. And I was asked about this quite rightly in the comments. And I said, look, the thing I try to do with my newsletter is write about things that I think I might know a little bit more about than the average punter, the average Joe, because I've been immersed in it and thought about it deeply for a long time. And I cannot say that that is true of Welsh politics. I would be bluffing, and I don't like bluffing. Certainly not in this newsletter. It's not it. That's not
No.
what this is for. And then all of this kicked off, and I thought, God, this is a big thing in the Labour Party. I write about the Labour Party. What am I going to do?
And it
And
is a big deal.
thankfully, a very, very good friend of mine, who really does know his stuff, offered to write some pieces on the Welsh situation for me. So, David Collins, thank you so, so much for your
I've really enjoyed
brilliant and
reading them.
insightful pieces on Wales. It's been great to have the kind of depth that Hard Thinking on the Soft Left is supposed to offer, and that I just could not have done.
I've really enjoyed reading them. Obviously, I should say again at this point, if you want to read Emma's newsletter, which you do, and mine, which I hope you also do, you should head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast because you get our extra episodes and both the paid versions of our newsletters. So yeah, it's been fascinating to see and read David's writing for you on what's going on in Wales. In Westminster, we had the first Prime Minister's questions of Sir Keir Starmer's premiership. Now, he'll be pleased because nothing very dramatic happened. Which.
No, it was interesting. Sunak went almost entirely on international and defence
Yes,
issues,
yes.
which I think is probably a sensible strategy for an interim leader of the opposition, because A, it was kind of consensual, which is what Sunak's pitch has been ever since stepping down. And B, domestic policy is what the Tories are going to tear each other apart over. So
Yes.
taking any sort of a position on any of those issues would have been much, much harder for him to do whilst keeping the party together as much as possible in the aftermath of the election. And C, let's face it, international policy mostly, although we'll probably come on to a domestic policy issue in a moment, is what tears the Labour Party apart. So laying a few traps like, will you stick to the, I can't remember what it's called, but the Prime Minister's ability to just call a
Oh,
war whenever they
yes.
want to,
Yes.
was quite a clever way of Sunak getting Keir Starmer to take a stance that that wouldn't necessarily be popular with all of his backbenchers.
Right, it was like prerogative powers.
Prerogative power, that's it, yeah.
Executive powers. So I basically agree entirely with everything you've said. The only caveat I would put is, and it possibly doesn't matter at this stage in the parliament, it did give Sir Keir Starmer even more of a chance to look like a statesman, which, look, you get by sort of default if you're the prime minister anyway.
But his first PMQs, he was obviously going to look a bit leaderly and statesmanly.
Entirely.
And I honestly think, I get that, but I don't think of all the calculations that that would be the biggest problem because, for the Tories, because that's where we are at.
And it's 1 week into a 5-year parliament.
And we've just come off the back of both the Blenheim summit and NATO summits.
Yeah.
So he's kind of doing that anyway.
I have to return to a point that we've made, and because I find it so bloody frustrating in some ways. Like, Rishi Sunak was self-deprecating. He made a joke about Team GB and saying, oh, they probably don't want to hear anything from me about winning. He, as we've said, he was also statesmanly in the way he was consensual and talk about big international issues. I don't really understand why you can behave like this as prime minister.
I mean, so there's some quite interesting discussion about the difference between Ed Miliband post-leadership and Ed Miliband in leadership.
Well, Ed Miliband, again, behaved so well in post-leadership.
Yeah, and I think that there are a ridiculous number of pressures on the leader of a party to behave in a way that we wouldn't. That then when they're released, as it's always sort of framed, they don't have to do that anymore. And then we're all like, oh, you're so much more authentic now.
Yeah.
And I wonder, actually, and we'll probably never know because nobody is ever there really. I mean, maybe Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, and look how well that went. their authentic self when leading, because there are different things that are expected of you.
That's probably fair.
So I think it's a little unfair on both Sunak and Ed Miliband. And Gordon Brown there was a fair amount of this with Gordon Brown.
Yes.
Why couldn't we have that version of X? Well, because that version of X would have been excoriated in the press for behaving in exactly the way that you're praising them for now.
Yeah, maybe to an extent. I mean, I think Rishi Sunak could have behaved more like this and it would have been okay, but I totally understand the point you're making.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rishi Sunak messed his leadership up quite a lot by not being more of a national consensus leader and bowing far too often to internal Conservative Party pressures.
I agree.
And some of that was behavioural, and tonal.
Yes.
So I think it is a balance, and I think he got the balance wrong, but I think the balance of pressures on him was different.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair comment. I just want to pick up on one more moment from PMQs. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Emma, but Kim Ledbetter asked a question, which I confess I was slightly confused about, because isn't she now a minister?
She's a PPS.
Okay, so she's allowed to ask the question.
Yeah.
Okay, so she is Jo Cox's sister. And asked a question about the Jo Cox Foundation, wasn't it? And it was a really, really moving moment. So Keir gave a really lovely answer. And actually, Kim Ledbetter was almost sort of in tears at the moment. It was a really, really moving, quite profound moment. Anyway, I just wanted to highlight that because I was quite touched by it.
Yeah, she's a very interesting politician.
Yes.
Who I have a lot of time and respect for.
I agree. It was a really powerful moment. We've been talking about consensus. We've got the Tory leadership race.
Just before we move on from not PMQs as such, but parliamentary, we probably should talk about the King's Speech vote and the amendment and the fallout. Just because.
Yeah. Also, what we're not talking about.
Because if we don't, I'll be accused of glossing over Labour's issues.
Oh, If you thought I was going to let you get away with it, you've got another thing coming. But we can talk about it in that order if you want. We've obviously, Keir Starmer has removed the whip for 6 months from seven mostly left-wing MPs after defying the whip.
Yeah, I think they're all campaign group, aren't they?
I think it was like John McDonnell, Rebecca Long Bailey.
Yeah. Richard Bergen.
Yes, which is, of course, a huge loss of intellect to the Labour Party to lose Richard Bergen. What was your take on it all?
So you can't vote against the King's Speech. You can't vote to amend a King's Speech. It's a confidence thing. I don't
Although
know
I've
what.
heard some people think it was an overreaction, a bit of control freakery.
I think so. I've heard two reactions. One, it was control freakery. Well, no, three reactions. One, it was control freakery. Two, it was absolutely right and it was exactly what they should have done. And the third and probably most interesting one is it's neither fish nor fowl and falls a bit too softly down the middle. And either they should have expelled them completely or done nothing at all. But this kind of halfway house, I find that interesting. I think the proof will be in what happens with these people in the next 6 months and then in month seven, if they are
Yes.
readmitted.
Yes, 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 yes.
So they have been told during this 6 months they are expected to vote with the Labour Party in order to prove.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
That's what I've been led to understand. And so that 6 months will include the budget.
Oh, how interesting.
So if, for example, there isn't a measure on the two-child cap in the budget, and I think there's an awful lot of pressure on Rachel Rees for there to be, from not just
Sure.
from the usual suspects, but from everybody,
Yes.
then how they then vote on that might well be the difference between readmittance and not. I think the seven themselves comprise different groups of people, although they are all on one particular part of the Labour Party. They're at different points in their career with different levels of ambition for their careers. So John McDonnell is in his 70s. He's had a heart attack in the past. He's led,
He's been the Shadow
been
Chancellor.
to the Shadow Chancellor. So he's reached the highest place he's going to get to in Labour politics and gone beyond that now. And now he's just a backbencher again. So it may well be that this is his valedictory parliament, and as such, he's made a decision to be a bit free about how he behaves. Richard Bergen, on the other hand, very much has ambition. Zara Sultana very much has ambition.
Presumably Rebecca Long Bailey still has as well.
Presumably, she still harbours some ambition, though I suspect not as leadership. Zara Sultana's poor me tour pissed me off a bit.
Okay.
And not for the reasons that you might think. It's not because I'm instinctually, oh, Keir, everything he does is gold.
No.
It was, you cannot claim to have taken a brave stance and then complain that there are consequences. Because the point of bravery is that there are consequences.
I think that's perfectly fair. I think that's perfectly fair.
And that's something that's been percolating away with me this week for, because of the Just Stop Oil court case as well. And yeah, there's other things like earlier this month, the Assange stuff.
Yeah.
And that part of bravery seems to have been lost in modern dialogue, and I'm going to start a one woman campaign to bring back the understanding of what bravery means when it comes to consequences.
Well, I think that's very brave of you.
Yeah,
There's a
and
couple of
imagine what the
other.
consequences will be.
Yeah. Obviously, Labour's big policy push today. The next big thing is GB Energy. We've learned today that it's going to work with the Crown Estate on that to build wind farms, and it hopes that's going to power 20 million homes. This is one of those policy areas where the proof of the pudding really is going to be in the eating because it was a huge part of the election campaign. They've obviously got stuck into it early, which is fair enough. There's not much more to say at the moment, but it's going to be that this is really on the one to watch list, isn't it? Because it's one of the things in 5 years, Sir Keir and the Labour government is going to be judged on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm massively excited about GB
Sure.
Energy. I mean, it's literally everything that I think that a Labour government should be about. It also gives us a chance to have a really good Barney with NIMBYs, which will very much include the Greens and Lib Dems. So that will
Yeah.
be fun. And it's existential,
Yep.
frankly. We should be more energy self-reliant. We have all the weather in the UK that we need.
We have all the weather.
All the weather. We are. If you look at where we get oil and gas from, it ain't predominantly the North Sea, it's autocracies. People that we don't want to empower and give loads of money to. So the more that we can switch to energy independence, the better. Quite apart from the existential climate arguments.
It ties us back to the beginning of the show about being independent, not needing Russia or some rather unpleasant Middle Eastern states to get your oil.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so I think it's a big ask. The UK traditionally is not great at building infrastructure to time or to budget. It will be very interesting to see how well they manage to do that, particularly in the face of what will be fierce local opposition in times.
Yep.
But the time to do that kind of big, brave ask is at the beginning of your government.
Yeah. I'm so excited about how we're going to take the piss out of the Greens.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up, we should acknowledge that the Tory leadership election is underway. We don't need to discuss it much now because there's going to be so much of
Because
it
it's
to
going on
discuss.
forever. They're
Because it's going
mental.
on. Because it's. Do you think that is a bad decision? I think
I
it's
think
quite
it's
a
a
good decision.
terrible decision.
Oh, I disagree.
Honestly, so I can. In 2010, I went to volunteer on the Ed Miliband leadership campaign,
Right.
right? And we wanted a long contest because if it had been a short contest, David would have won very
Sure.
quickly. And there was a lot of, sense that Ed could introduce himself to the party better, and it worked.
Sure.
But what it left us with was a summer where the Tories absolutely set the narrative of there's no money left, Labour have bankrupted the country, and we never ever got out of that hole. And the Tories are just absolutely digging themselves into that space. If they bicker amongst themselves for 3 months, while every single Labour minister goes on television and tells you, God, it's worse than we thought.
Yeah.
We've inherited a mess. It's the worst economic inheritance since 1945. That is the narrative set.
I get that. I just also think it might give them a chance to pick someone that's actually sustainable and decent.
I don't think they're going to, though.
Okay, maybe.
I mean, parties don't tend to do that after they lose. Yeah, they always go. So Labour went to Ed Miliband, that was further to the left than Gordon Brown, who was further to the left than Tony Blair, then went to Jeremy Corbyn. The Tories went to William Hague, who was further to the right than John Major, then went to Ian
Yep.
Duncan Smith, who was further to the right than
Yep.
him. You tend to retreat to your comfort zone in a
I
loss
guess
like
that's right.
this. So they should get out of the way, whichever nutter they're going to put in charge.
Well, I mean, I think it's a bit. So the two people we know are in the race now are James Cleverly and Tom Tugendhat. So
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to describe either of them as nutters.
I would say no, I don't think either of them are going to win either. But
Right.
also, they're having to wear nutter cloaks in order to get a hearing.
Yes, I mean, I have quite a lot of time for Tom Tugendhat, as you might imagine. And yeah, him already talking about things about like leaving the ECHR, even though he previously warned against it. I find it a bit disappointing, really. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Well, we will be watching it when we return from our summer break. If people are going to miss you, Emma, over the summer, tell them where they can keep up with you.
Well, I will still be keeping up my newsletter, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. I will be on Twitter. I cannot get on board with Threads. It's like the worst of smug Twitter is all gathered in one place.
It's not very good for news. But
It's
anyway,
not,
you.
well, it's not good for news, but also it's so fucking po-faced and holier than thou. And I'm like, I just want to make shitty jokes.
And you do it with aplomb, may
There
I
you
say.
go. There you go. So, yes, that's where I'll be, and walking the streets of Leighton in the sunshine if we ever get any.
Lovely. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media, and head over to theaddition.net where I'll be keeping some blogs and stuff up going over the summer. Again, the best way to support the show is patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. You get all the stuff we do, including that and extra shows here. We'll be back for a little discussion on Monday for those subscribers, and then we'll see you when Parliament returns after the summer.